those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. Moving on to verse 17. As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. We're currently talking about calling, what God calls us to do, with some of the gifts that He's given to us. And so as we come to talk about money, we need to understand that Jesus is our King. He has bought us with His own blood, and He calls us to serve Him with our money. Now, do you find that hard to hear? Why would you find it hard to hear? There'd be a couple of different reasons, but the usual reason would be very simple. People tend to love money. Or if not money, at least control. Now, whenever you've got a topic on which Jesus has given you a command, serve me with your money, and where we do not want to do it, we're in a spiritually dangerous place. We need to talk about money. Why are we prone to love money? That's not a very hard question. It says right in Ecclesiastes 10:19, money answers everything. And that's an exaggeration, but it can certainly seem that way. You need to eat, you need to be clothed. The normal way to acquire food and clothing is you buy it with money. With money, you can try to address your wants. See a great car? There's enough money, you can have that car. You can do good with money. Read about Barzillai in the story of David and Absalom. Barzillai took care of King David and his whole household and all of them while they were fleeing from Absalom. How was Barzillai able to do that? Well, he was a very wealthy man. You can do evil with money. You see, the lords of the Philistines, they bribe Delilah to turn over Samson to them. They do it with money. You know, money's the tool that buys the other tools. It makes it the master tool. Why so easy to love money? Now, we're prone not just to love money, but to actually serve money. Or you could say, worship money. In Judges 17, we meet a man who took 200 pieces of silver and melted it down and shaped it and made an idol out of it. And he became the priest to his idol. You say, all right, he's going to be, people are actually bowing down to money. Had been money. That's what the rich would do. You get a shinier idol that way. You make it out of silver. If you're poor, you make it out of wood. You might say, well, today people don't literally melt down precious metals and bow down to them, but you can still direct your life where money is your number one. And if it's your number one purpose, your number one goal, your number one hope, your number one dream, your number one fear, that's your God, actually. So Jesus said, you cannot serve both God and money. Notice that he didn't say that about that many things. He actually didn't say you cannot serve both God and sex. He did not say you cannot serve both God and education. He did not say you cannot serve both God and... He said that about money. I got a word for you. The word is insidious. Insidious is something that, like, you think you have a beat, but then it sneaks around your defenses and it gets you from behind. Insidious is like it just gets there. It's just when you thought you were safe, you're not safe. And the love of money is insidious. Late in the Bible, when John sees Babylon fall, He also sees the kings and the princes and the merchants and all the wealthy of the earth, and they are wailing and mourning the loss of wealth when Babylon, the mighty city, goes down. Quite a picture. Picture of the end of time, and people are worried about the loss of money. You think at the end of time, you got other things to worry about. But when you're so brought up in money and in wealth, well, that's what they were concerned about. They couldn't imagine being concerned about anything else. And oh my goodness, look at that great city with all that wealth. So beloved, you're in severe danger. Because money's not something you can simply blow off and say, fine, I will never have anything to do with money. It's only so simple. Actually, we are called to work and to earn money. We need a little bit. But as soon as you get this prize, you have to not cuddle it away. But you have to use it for the things that God directs you to use it for. As soon as you get some money, Jesus calls you to turn and start passing it out. Get your paycheck, you've got to pay taxes. That'll happen automatically. You got to feed yourself. You got to feed your family. You got to pay tithes. You got to take care of people. So I thought about money, and I decided that money is not like football. You know, in football, somebody passes you the ball, and you catch it, and your job is not to hand it out. So the people running up to you are on the other team. All right, your job is to protect the football and run like crazy into the end zone, because it's your ball, and you got to get it to the end zone. No, money is like ultimate frisbee. Who here has ever played ultimate frisbee? All right, I have to explain it to mostly the older set. All right, there you go. In ultimate frisbee, like football, you have a rectangular field with two end zones. And you have two teams. And you have an object that your team is trying to advance down the field into the end zone. And if the other team gets their hands on the frisbee, they can, of course, advance it in the opposite direction. It is a great deal like football that way. Except for this key difference. And no, it's not the point that it's a frisbee. Who cares about that? The point is this. In ultimate frisbee, everybody's running around except for one person. And that's the person who has the frisbee. As soon as you actually catch the prize, you have to start looking around for who you're going to throw it onto. You don't get to run Ultimate Frisbee until you throw the Frisbee. And then you get to start running again. Now, why would you obey Jesus with your money? Before we go on to who we're supposed to throw it to, let's talk about why we would play Ultimate Frisbee with our money, as Jesus calls us to, and not play football, which, as we all know, is the more popular sport. Well, the reason is that while money is a great tool, it's a terrible god. Money is a great tool and a terrible god. And one thing you want to do in life is use things in their proper place. I'm tempted to go on at length about different things you want to use in the proper place, but I'll just leave that to your imagination, right? Life is better when you use things in the proper way, in the proper place and time. Money's a tool. It's a good tool. Terrible god. As it says here, 1 Timothy 6:7, we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. I once saw the then oldest member of the congregation pass away in front of me, and indeed, he could not take anything with him. It's true. You cannot take anything with you. And money doesn't give the happiness that it promises you. Ecclesiastes 5:10, whoever loves money will not be satisfied with money. The most famous American quote on those lines is John D. Rockefeller, who was in his own era richer than Elon Musk and richer than all these guys. Mr. Rockefeller, how much money will be enough? A little more. And money does not buy the things that bring happiness. You know, knowing that you are secure in the Lord's hand, that brings happiness. Well, psychologists will tell you that long-term relationships, steady friendships, loyalty, belonging, things you can get at church, those things tend to make for happiness. And those are the things you can't buy. Now, you can buy a therapist, and therapists can be helpful. I think they're helpful in part because they provide the illusion of friendship. And I don't want to diss that, all right? There can be a time and a place for a therapist. But lest you think it's actually friendship, try staying beyond the end of the hour. And you'll discover that actually you do need to go now because that chair is reserved by somebody else. You know, money is a terrible god. It might protect you, or it might make you a target. As it says in Proverbs, a rich man's wealth is the ransom of his life. But the poor man hears no rebuke. Point being, what would you kidnap a poor man for? He can't get anything from his family. And I thought in this connection of a couple celebrities whose names are known to you, who gave a Mercedes to son or to father, and then son or father was shot dead to carjack the Mercedes. And if I told you who they were, you would understand why they didn't give their kid or their father a Chevy, because it would have seemed like too small of a gift for such a wealthy man. But you know, if you gave him a Chevy, he might be alive. That carjacked with the Mercedes. Sixth sense. Love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Through this craving. Love of money creates a craving. And if you're craving, you're not happy. And bear in mind, you can have a craving for money when you're rich. You can have a craving for money when you're poor. You can have a craving for money when you're young. You're more likely, perhaps, to have a craving for money when you're old. All right? Anybody can have a craving for money, but when you're craving, you are not happy. Money's a terrible god. And as it goes on to say, when you are craving money, you are foolish. I remember reading a Sports Illustrated profile of Scottie Pippen, basketball player. And Scottie Pippen was going on in this article about how rich the owner of the team was. The owner of the team had started Microsoft with Bill Gates. He's going on, can you imagine having $40 billion? Mind you, Pippen had millions of his own at this point, but that wasn't enough. Could you imagine having billions of dollars? And I read it, I said, this guy is painting a bullseye on himself. He too nakedly and obviously wants to get richer. Some con man is going to come along and say, have I got a deal for you? And sure enough, I Googled Scottie Pippen scammed, and I got a hit. I called it before it happened because he was so obviously... like just slavering to be rich, and you could also tell reading he's not terribly sophisticated. It's like, this guy is making himself a mark. Anybody can read this and say, okay, I can get the Scottie Pippen with a business game. I can relieve it, some of his money. Now, how bad a god is money? Well, it's often led to slavery. I asked earlier, why would you kidnap a poor man? And you might have said, well, because you can enslave a poor man. And why would you enslave a man? Because you can get money from him. How bad a god money is. People will have, throughout history, grab people and enslave them. Whole range of circumstances, but made them slaves because of the love of money. And there's a softer form, which is when you are led into debt, when you put yourself into debt. Not much softer slavery, but it's also a kind of slavery. Be very, very careful and prudent with debt. Makes you a slave to the money god. It's a terrible god. But Jesus is a great god. Because he does help you throughout this life, death itself, and to eternity. Jesus is a great god because he loves you. And the cattle on a thousand hills are his, are all his. Jesus loved you and gave himself for you. You have no god like Jesus. For that reason, it makes perfect sense to keep money your tool, and Jesus, your God. So what does Jesus tell us to do with money? Well, four things. Earn it. Provide for self and family. Provide for church and state. Be generous with the poor. First, earn money. Either yourself or by supporting the family's wage earner. Helping the dollar go farther. Caring for those at home. This also is labor and also important. As I talk about earning money, I don't want to make it sound like you're not working if you're not working outside the home. There's lots of ways to work. If you're working in the garden, you are more directly earning your food out of that garden. I'm going to speak now of earning. As you earn, it says that if anyone does not work, in one way or another, neither let him eat. The reference isn't to small children or the elderly or the disabled. But it is a reference to the bigger kids who should do their chores with a thankful heart. But sometimes resist the chores. Shall we think about that for a minute? If you never do anything, are you suddenly going to know how when you have your own place? Should your parents do everything for you? No, of course you should do some work. Of course you should set the table, put away your clothes, and do whatever kinds of chores are given to you. And as you get older, of course you should do more and more of it. Because work is what we're to do. The ordinary business of the day. 6 days you shall labor. So that's part of, a key part, of what God expects us to do. And it's through our work that it needs to provide it for. By the sweat of your brow you shall eat bread. But even before the fall, that's after the fall, but before the fall he'd already taken the man and placed him in the garden to work it and to keep it. In other words, work is part of our created purpose. We're made to work. From before the fall, and that's continued after the fall, it's just more frustrating after the fall. But we're still called to work. And you know, food does not magically appear. Whether you're a farmer or not, I mean, somebody's got to be doing some work, or we all starve. And the society that loads the people sitting around is going to become a poor society. If you want to have a rich society, you want a society where most people are working. And then the society can begin to advance. So your focus in school, kids. Now, when you're younger, just learn what's in front of you. But as you get towards the end of the mandatory schooling, what is laid out for you, you've got to start thinking, how am I going to earn my living? And I warn you, you cannot simply say, oh, I'm going to get married and my husband's going to earn it, because unless you've got the guy in hand, well, actually, even if you do have the guy in hand, he may die on it, as my grandfather did. You see, my grandmother had a college degree in her back pocket and could pull that out and go to work. Well, you don't know the future. You need to be asking yourself, okay, what am I going to do? And you can't just say, well, I took basket weaving major because it was so interesting weaving those baskets. Yeah, great. And what are you going to do once you finish in debt with your college degree in basket weaving? The first thing to know about money, you're called to earn some. Now, once you've earned it, where do you spend it? Who are you to pass it on to? You need to provide for yourself and for your family. Once again, 2 Thessalonians 3:10, if anyone does not work, neither let him eat. We say it's through doing the work set before us that we gain the right to eat. The key verse in the survival of the Virginia colony, by the way. And he says in 1 Timothy 5, we're to provide for our relatives. And if anyone, he means anyone of good earning age, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, he's denied the faith. He's worse than an unbeliever. What do you mean, worse than an unbeliever? What does the unbelievers do that? And for you not to do what is obviously, like, you don't need to believe in God to know that that's what you're supposed to do. Take care of your kids. Take care of your parents. Okay? Take care of your own. Like, people get that. If you don't get that, you're coming in below the unbelievers. And you might be thinking of Psalm 37 that we sing often. Now I'm old, but I've never seen the children of the righteous man making bread. So what do you do with your money? Well, first, you keep yourself from being a burden. And you provide for your family. Secondly, you provide for church and state. Provide for church. With a tithe, 10% of our income. And there can be time for special offerings beyond that. And you find out, well, what's the church do with the money? Well, three things. First of all, it says we take care of those who are poor and needy, the widows and the orphans. You find that in 1 Timothy 5 and in Acts. And as the church does not print money, unlike the state, the church cannot provide financial help unless somebody's already given some financial help. For the church to care for the poor, someone must be contributing to the church. Secondly, it provides for the church to help with the spread of the gospel. Paul says very bluntly in Romans 15, I hope when I come to you in Rome that you'll help me get to Spain. He didn't mean I hope you give me directions at the shipping depot to tell me where to go. Right? He meant I hope you'll give me some financial support so I can buy the ticket in the shipping depot. He says to the Philippians, you know, at first it was just you that was supporting me in the work of the gospel. And thirdly, the church is to pay the ministers. It says in 1 Corinthians 9:14, the Lord has commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. Now, when it comes to the state, the New Testament is totally consistent. You're to pay your taxes. Someone will say, yeah, but you know how evil the American government is? I'll say, granted. You know how evil the Roman government was? We're going to pay our taxes. And thirdly, we're going to be generous with the needy. Again, it says in Psalms, the righteous man freely gives and lends. In Proverbs, it's stronger. Whoever gives to the poor lends to the Lord, and the Lord will repay him. And it's that belief that's underlying 6:19. When the rich do good works and are generous and are sharing, they're storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future. Be generous with your money, God sees, and God rewards. It's an ultimate frisbee. Jesus calls you to pass, not so much to the Mercedes deal, to take care of your own necessities and the families, the church and the state, and those who are poor. Now money is insidious, and so the Lord has laid out two guardrails to keep us safe, two things that are there, so that we bump into them, and we say, oh, I'm really starting to love money. I'm faced with a decision now. I need to either repent of this love, or I need to drive on right through this guardrail and go off the cliff. What's it going to be? There's two guardrails, deal with our work and deal with our money. The first guardrail is the Sabbath. We're to earn our money 6 days a week at most. We can stop on Sunday. And you say, why? Why did God say so? I know God said so, but why did God say so? Well, if we obey that, we are demonstrating to the world and to ourselves that money is not our God. That we trust God to provide for us. That we are not so filled with anxiety that we think, if I don't work every moment, I'm going to starve. No, we trust that God will take care of us when we honor Him by not working 7 days a week. I remember teaching a world religions class at Pierce College years ago. And we were going over the commandments. And it was kind of amusing. One person was in Northeast Philly, mostly Catholic, I think. And the one lady's like, well, it doesn't mean you're not supposed to work on Sunday. And this guy was like, of course it means you're not supposed to work on Sunday. But that's tough when you can make time on hand. Yeah. Of course it means that. And the second guardrail is the tithe. Now, why is that one the guardrail? Well, as I said, to provide for yourself is pretty automatic because you get hungry. So, of course, you're going to do that. And to provide for your family is obvious. Unbelievers do that. And the state makes providing for the state pretty easy because they do automatic deduction and you never even see that money. All right, so a lot of the places you're supposed to pass the frisbee, you're going to pass the frisbee. But the church doesn't come after you for your tithe. You don't submit your income form so we know how much you're supposed to be given. That's on you. Because the Lord loves a cheerful giver. And so that one is the one that you could cheat on. And 10% is big enough once you grow up that one bites. Now, it doesn't bite my kids right now. Because my kids, A, are getting such small allowances, who cares, you know? So they get an allowance of $1 or $2. And I'm going to put a quarter in, which is much more than 10%. And they're like, okay, great, put the quarter in, you know. Not using anything with that money anyway. But when you first get your paycheck and you calculate 10% on it, you go, oh, that's actually substantial. That actually bites. And it has to bite or it's not a guardrail. Do you get my point? If it's too easy, if it's just a 10, if it's just a 20, that doesn't check you on whether you are falling prey to the love of money. To be enough that you don't want to do it, and then you know whether you are willingly, unwillingly, or not obeying the Lord. Now, if anyone says, well, I'm sure he doesn't demand as much in the New Testament era. See how much richer we are now than back then? I mean, back then you're talking about people who might starve if the harvest isn't good. We are almost uniformly far richer than them, than pretty much any of the ancients. The true God has called us in grace. He has shed the blood of His own Son to purchase you, body and soul, for eternity. In His grace, He calls you to partake with Him of His divine nature. And together with these great privileges, He calls you not only to share in his suffering, but also to devote your money to his service. He has given you the job. He's given you the education. He's given you the opportunity to earn that money. So he calls you to serve him with this, as indeed he calls us to serve him with all of his gifts that he entrusts to us. When you look at your money, don't say, I'm the owner. Look at your money. Don't say, I am a steward. And the steward must answer to the owner about how he uses what was entrusted to him. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you that we are fed, that we are clothed, that we can see that indeed we are well provided for. And so, Lord, help us to be free of the love of money. Help us to believe that you will never leave us or forsake us. Help us to trust in you and cheerfully and gladly to pass the money on in those places where you call us to send it. I pray this in Jesus' name.